Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with John Couch, engineering and producing the show. It was too good to last, John. The excessive heat wave is back. Yeah, here we get some wonderful rain. July was the wettest month ever in Tucson and cooled things down, but the rain disappears for a couple of days, and yep, going to be hot and humid. All right, it is the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday, the 3rd of August, 2021. We are in our 11th year here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Terry Bracey, our expert on Washington and governmental affairs. Mr. Bracey, whose unique role in representing Tucson's interests began with a 10-year stint on the staff of famed Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry was then appointed to sub-cabinet positions by President Carter and subsequently served under four presidents of both parties. He's the founding partner of the respected public affairs firm in D.C., Bracey Tucker Brown, which has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. Terry, how are you?
Bill, I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. I know you're enjoying what you're seeing in on the Olympics.
Oh, I love it. I'm an Olympics addict. It's not for me, Bill. It's not so much the winning and the losing, although that's important. But it's the stories that come out of it. These people pursuing their dreams in sometimes obscure sports, using their own money, traveling over. I was taken by the story of Valerie Allman, who actually works as a professional dancer and used her own money to travel around the world to compete, and she's gone on now to win a gold medal in the women's discus throw. And, you know, Bill, the other side that I like is there's always drama. And I think this year, Simone Biles really, you know, taught us something about the mental anguish that athletes have to deal with at this level. And I was quite taken by that story, and I'm so pleased to see that she came back and won a medal.
Yeah, so
that's great.
Yeah, she stepped away and needed some downtime, and you know, more power to her. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, Terry, the big story, kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, is the historic infrastructure bill gonna? Is it gonna happen?
Well, there are really two bills. One deals with basic infrastructure and has been negotiated by a bipartisan group in the Senate. And a second is a Democrats-only attempt to deal with what they call human infrastructure. The first, which could see passage in the Senate within days or weeks, is a $550 billion new spending on roads, bridges, transit, passenger rail, $66 billion on passenger rail, airports, and drinking and wastewater systems, which are so important to us in the desert. And the program would also bring high-speed internet to rural areas all over the state and make a major investment in new forms of clean energy, including setting up stations for electric car charging all across the country.
We've been hearing some reports that Arizona's own Senator Sinema has played a big role in bringing the two sides together. Do you think that's correct?
She has indeed. She and retiring Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, a Republican, are credited with keeping this bipartisan effort together and getting this possible result. The details on how it's going to be paid for, I'd like to hear Shelley talk about. Still a bit fuzzy. But even if it requires more lending, I think most Americans support this legislation. It's badly, badly needed.
So you talked about the other initiative. This is the so-called Democratic Initiative. What is its future?
Well, the Democrats are going to try to pass on it. It'll have to be a party line vote. And again, Senator Sinema has announced her opposition, so it's not clear to me they'll get the votes. But this bill has been largely engineered by Senator Sanders and would make historic investments in human infrastructure. It would bring almost a million new low-income Americans under the Medicaid program. And happily for me, it would expand Medicare to include vision, dental, and hearing services. It would greatly expand child care programs and preschool programs for single moms and dads. It would provide free community college education for all who want it. And it's estimated to cost a whopping $3.5 trillion and would be paid for by increasing taxes on those earning more than $400,000 a year. And I guess, Bill, this would be the biggest expansion of government services since the New Deal with Franklin Roosevelt.
Does it have a chance, in your opinion, Terry Bracey?
Yeah, that's a big question. It's highly unlikely that Senator Sanders and House Speaker Pelosi are simply going to give up their dream here and go along with the opposition of Senator Sinema and others. And it's all going to come down, as all legislation does, I think, Bill, to a lot of negotiation. And I've rarely seen Speaker Pelosi lose in those negotiations.
Terry, across the country, state legislatures have been moving, the Republican legislatures have been moving what they call voter reform legislation. From a federal point of view, do you see any future action on voting rights, giving the green light to maybe making some changes?
Bill, I think there's a fair chance that something will pass before the end of the year. We have 100 state legislators in town right now asking the Congress to act in their behalf to stop this. It's an absolute outrage what's going on in the country, where some legislatures are just challenging the basic tenets of democracy, not to speak of our own in Arizona. The only thing stopping action is really the filibuster, which allows the Senate Republican minority to kill action on voting rights.
Is there a simple fix, in your opinion, to modifying the filibuster? Can this be done in a rather simple way? And I think most of the American public, Terry, probably doesn't understand what's at stake here and what we're even talking about.
Well, the problem is that several Democratic senators, including Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin, and probably a lot that aren't saying so publicly, are unwilling so far to give up the power that the filibuster gives senators. The power to delay is a tremendous power. Many opponents of the filibuster reform, they believe that without this power to block legislation, the Senate would simply become another House of Representatives with longer terms. But with the threats to voting rights going on around the country, most Democrats, I believe, including those in Arizona, strongly believe that the filibuster as we know it has to be amended or knocked out. Meanwhile, I believe, Bill, we're going to see the Justice Department get very active in challenging these new laws around the country.
Terry, I want to return to this massive infrastructure bill. It harkens back to a time when the two sides, the two parties, actually worked across the aisle. And as you know, Morris K. Udall was really a master at that. Is this an optimistic, is this just some kind of an anomaly, or could this bode well for maybe the future?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I think infrastructure is something which really unifies everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We all ride on, you know, I-10. We built I-10. We built Cold Road. We built Aviation Parkway. We built Keno Parkway. You go all through our city, and even the downtown infrastructure was all done with federal money. So I think it really unifies both sides. We all need this as a society. And I think if there's any issue that's going to unify the Democrats and the Republicans in the current environment, I think it is this infrastructure issue. But will this go into other areas? You know, it's a good start, but we'll see. I'm a little skeptical.
All right, Terry Bracey, always a pleasure. and hope things are going well for you. Thank you, Terry.
They are indeed, and thank you, Bill. Have a good day.
All right. Terry Bracey, our contributor in Washington, his take on some of the very big issues facing Congress right now. With me for his take, and he's giving me a thumbs up, his take on the markets and the financial situation. Yeah, the market's up on a Tuesday. Yeah, what else is new? Now, Shelley Fishman is standing by in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Coming up at 12:30, Dr. Trujillo is here from Tucson Unified, our back-to-school interview. That's coming up, so we've got quite an hour left ahead, so stay with us.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Always a pleasure to welcome Shelley Fishman to our program for our Tuesday Moneymaker Report. Interesting comments. From Terry Bracey, our contributor, who comes on our program once a month, right before our Tuesday Moneymaker report. Terry was talking about paying for the whole infrastructure, and he wanted some of your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, hi, Bill. Happy Tuesday.
Happy
and
Tuesday.
Markets are in good shape, so we can leave them alone. They're taking care of themselves.
Move
today.
On, right?
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things, especially as we go through this pandemic, is that the economy and the politics in this country are so, you know, irretrievably intermixed with each other that it is very difficult to separate one from a policy perspective and not understand what the economic implications of those policy changes would be. Now, you know, there's the traditional infrastructure bill, and then there's this $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill that is being really touted in the House certainly by the Liberal Democrats. Let's just talk about the first one. That's $1 trillion. It's $1 trillion over about 5 years. And they're going to pay for it, they say, without raising any taxes or any new sources of revenue, which means they're going to take a buck here and a quarter there and a dime there and a nickel from there and hope that it all adds up to $1 trillion. And if it doesn't, they'll lie about it. You know, they'll simply say, well, growth that is promoted by all of this industry will increase taxes, and so that those tax increases will pay for all of the money we're spending. Mm-hmm. And as Terry so wisely said, and at the end of the day, if they have to borrow money to pay for it, they will.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we have about 7 million people unemployed. There are 8 million job openings that can't be filled. So I ask you, Shelley, okay, we have these huge projects that are going to, that are certainly needed, repairing bridges and on it goes, our interstate highways. Where in the world are we going to get the people for the workforce to make those projects
you
happen?
You said it exactly right, Bill. Where in the world? And so, you know, one way to look at what we have now, look, we just got a report last week that said the growth of the GDP in the second quarter was 3.5%. Mm-hmm. The more important number that came out of that report was that we have now actually reached the GDP level that is exactly what it was before this pandemic started. So we've completely recovered to where we were. That said, what we haven't recovered is the six quarters of growth that would have occurred at, say, 2%. That's probably predicted to be sometime the end of this year, maybe the first quarter of next year. And at that point, from a statistical perspective, the economy is back on track as if the pandemic had not occurred. That said, we have 8 million jobs that we can't fill, 6% unemployment, and things that have changed fundamentally in the economy that we have no idea how to fix yet. Supply chains are completely stretched. We have pent-up demand with literally trillions of dollars of cash sitting on the sidelines. All of these things are creating uncertainty in the economy. But we also know that we have people at the lower end of the economic stratum who are saying, wait a second, I don't have to work for $12 an hour anymore. Mm-hmm. I can go to work for someplace that'll pay me $15 or $18 an hour. And so whole sectors of the economy are hurting for laborers. So, and some of these things are things that can't be done by robots.
Yeah.
And some of these 8 million jobs or 8 million are jobs that the reason they are begging for applicants right now is because they require training. And we don't have that training available in the economy. So what we have to do, especially if we're going to start pouring a trillion or more than $1 trillion into the economy for people who are going to have really good construction jobs mm-hmm. and factory jobs. I mean, all of this infrastructure stuff requires skilled laborers, and a lot of that labor is available, mm-hmm. is we're going to have to get it from immigrants. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to backfill a lot of these lower-paying jobs with unskilled immigrants. Okay, fine, that has traditionally been one way we've done it, but it's the semi-skilled and the newly skilled jobs that need to be filled that are available, that skill is available around the world from people who want nothing more than to get a green card and come here to work.
Because the jobs that people will leave to go to take a job building a highway or something, maybe they were working at a restaurant. So
exactly.
Now you're going to have more openings.
Precisely. but the skilled level jobs, the, mm-hmm. the ones that we have talked about for years here in this country, where the factories that are more computerized and robotized, that the skill levels that these jobs require, and by the way, the service level jobs, service sector jobs that require tremendous computer skills, we don't have those people available today. And they are available throughout the world. I like to tell a story. When I was traveling in Ireland several years ago, the tour guide asked a question that, of course, she knew nobody could get the answer correct, and was, other than Gaelic and English, what do you think is the most spoken language in Ireland?
I have no idea.
It's Polish.
Polish?
Polish. How could that be? Because during the whole 1990s, when Poland was trying to become the center of software development,
yes.
In the EU, they just brought in literally thousands and thousands, and it's a small country, Ireland, mm-hmm. thousands of Polish workers who were very good at those skills. And those workers liked Ireland and stayed.
And that helped propel Ireland to
Absolutely.
Become one of the high-tech capitals of the world.
You bet.
Yeah.
And allowed Ireland to cut its tax rate because for corporations and attract even more corporations, so it kind of fed on itself. Now, some of that is being reversed, hopefully, by this 15% minimum tax rate that is being agreed to by most of the European and industrialized world. That said, Bill, what we have is a situation of vastly changing economic criteria around the world that we will all be competing with to get these skilled people. And that is going to affect how we look at immigration. It is going to affect how we look at paying people who are less skilled. I think it is going to bring the need for a national work corps, a national service corps.
I'd love to see that.
That uses, that experience for training purposes. It is going to change the way we view this economy. Anytime you have fundamental change, and you and I have joked about this and even talked seriously about it in the past, that creates uncertainty, and the stock market is very uncertain with uncertainty. So that's why you have essentially a stock market that, even though you have daily volatility, it is kind of flatlined in the past months.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Fed uncertain about how to manage this economy. They're thinking about reducing the incentives that they have for introducing cash into the economy and for keeping interest rates as low as they are. They're scared to death about inflation. On the other hand, they're scared to death about letting this economy slow down too far, especially since all of the elements that contribute to the economy are so much in flux right now. So that is why I've said for investors, it is a time to be cautious. It is a time to not be greedy, to take the average returns of equity markets, which are not bad, 12% a year for the most part, and shoot for those kinds of returns while this uncertainty works itself out.
The post-pandemic world is for want of a few, maybe a cliche, a new world.
It is a new world. There is clearly going to be a new paradigm in how people work, what they expect from work, where they work, how they expect
where they work. Will they be returning to an office or not?
I mean, some will, that's still many won't. Determined. We're seeing so many potential changes, and even without cities and states introducing minimum wage changes, we're seeing wages in what were formerly very low wage jobs be forced up on their own. In other words, the market is doing that. We're seeing, and again, you can't underestimate the impact of supply line hang-ups. So we need to make sure that we keep the supply and the demand sides balanced. That will keep inflation in check. But how to do that is a very delicate thing. And you know, governments aren't good at delicate things.
No.
We'll see. But yeah, that's from a market perspective, from an investment perspective, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. So it's a time for investors to be cautious.
Well, the certainty is here on the Buckmaster Show that we are out of time, Shelley Fishman. Look forward to talking with you next Tuesday at 12:15. Thank you, Shelley.
Have a great week, Bill.
Have a great week.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, presented in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, we love green things. 13-acre site, chock full of very green things after all of the rain. So stop by, get your garden in great shape for the fall, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. And the website is greenthingsaz.com. While you're there, stop by Zocalo Village. At Zocalo Village, you'll see all of the beautiful merchandise, much of it handcrafted in Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Five shops in the Zocalo Village, and their website is zocalovillage.com. Our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's back to school at Tucson Unified School District. Tucson Unified is the second largest school district in the state of Arizona. Gabriel Trujillo, Dr. Trujillo, is with me in studio for his regular visit to this program. Dr. Trujillo, as we start a new, first of all, great to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
And you've got a pretty good smile on your face, because I think this is, in many, many years, this is about as good a financial shape as you have started a school year.
It is probably the best fiscal condition the district has been in at least 20 years.
Wow.
Yes. With the influx of federal cash that has come in through the CARES Act, mainly through the Elementary Secondary Schools Economic Recovery Fund, we've received over $230 million in three rounds of funding. You have the district right now, 48 hours before the opening of school, up almost 1,800 students more than we were heading into school last year, which
really?
Is a substantial. Yeah, it's a substantial enrollment recovery for us. So we're very, very excited about the potential in increased funding that could bring. And so we're riding very, very high right now. And you've got 2,000 students signed up for the inaugural year of the Tucson Unified Virtual Academy. Many of those students are outside the district coming in. So that's always a very, very positive sign for enrollment and funding.
How does Virtual Academy work? This is a new program for you.
This is a brand new program that is designed for families that aren't entirely comfortable having their students back in-person learning right now. What this is not is hybrid. This is not a part-time online, part-time in-person. This is 100% remote, 5 days a week, teacher-led instruction in a virtual format. And it's allowed us to really romance a lot of families that are not happy with charters or not happy with sister school districts who don't have this kind of a program.
Some of these parents didn't have a home for their children.
They did not. And you know, we are at 2,000 students signed up. All of these students get a free laptop and Wi-Fi hotspot with
That's
unlimited data.
That's part of the
data.
Deal, huh?
It's part of the deal, yeah.
Wow. Wow. And then all of their coursework will be monitored by an educational professional.
They will get a live teacher interfacing with them. This is not just assigning kids computer work. This is live teaching sessions day in and day out, full school days.
Then the enrollment of the parents deciding to maybe take a second look at Tucson Unified, that's got to be gratifying to you with enrollment up. And why are they taking that second look now at the district?
I think, number one, I think that online learning, not just unique to TUSD, but I think all around Pima County, was not as successful as it needed to be. And I don't think that's anybody's fault. I think when you're talking about online learning, that's a whole different way of delivering education. You don't just learn how to do that well overnight.
It fell short.
It fell short. And I think there was a lack of time that we had to prepare for it, a lack of PD, that professional development and training that we were able to give teachers. They had to turn themselves in to online teachers literally overnight, and we never recovered from that. And so I think what the pandemic has brought to the forefront with parents is just how important it is, the social aspects, the emotional aspects, the psychological.
The kids missed it.
Of being in person and, and interacting with other kids.
I would have, if I had been in that environment, I would have been just, I needed to be with other
Absolutely.
Kids.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we have this resurgence, unfortunately, of the what's called the Delta variant. And I know there's concern with you and your staff and the teachers and parents. And there's confusion about the masks, where your former employer, Phoenix Union High School District, has decided that they are going to go forward with a mask mandate regardless of vaccination status. And this is in defiance of state law. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, my thoughts are, first of all, the mask mandate that prevents local school districts from taking the necessary steps that they need to secure the health and safety of their students based off of medical recommendations, I think is an unprecedented incursion onto local control by a governor's office and a legislature that has championed local control and is down, that is really complained about the role of big government, and all of a sudden here they are playing big government and incurring upon it, coming in and incurring upon local control of local school boards. So I think what Phoenix Union
and
is doing,
that's been unprecedented. It should be up to a local school district to make decisions what is best for that district.
Absolutely. Absolutely. and up until this point, the legislature has parroted that exact point. The governor has parroted that exact point. So I think the spirit of what Phoenix Union is trying to do, I certainly understand it. However, you do have them violating state statute.
That's true.
My concern is
that this might wind up in court.
Yeah, my concern also is that the consequences could end up being a lot worse than the actual issue at hand. I do think that the issue at hand, of course, is making sure that they are able to take the necessary steps to secure the health and safety of their employees. But when you look at what could happen, you know, with an attorney general going to a court, getting a court order, ordering them to cease and desist, finding them in contempt, levying huge fines against that district, that those fines will take money out of the hands of kids. And so it'll be interesting to see how this will play out for Phoenix Union.
So what is the protocol at Tucson Unified when it comes to masks when school opens Thursday?
We are strongly recommending and strongly encouraging everybody, whether you're vaccinated or not, to show up wearing a mask all day, everywhere in our district, whether you're in a classroom, in a district facility. We are strongly encouraging everybody, when you step foot on our campus, whether you're an employee or student, wear your mask. We know that it is the most successful mitigation strategy that we have in the face of this fourth wave of a Delta variant that is more aggressive than any other strain of this virus we have seen.
Do you have any idea how much, and I know you can't release numbers, but percentage-wise of maybe the teachers and support staff who have been vaccinated?
Based off of our initial survey we did in the spring, when the vaccination campaign was in full swing, we had a good 5,500 respondents of our 7,700 employees, which was a huge sample, that had indicated to us that they were either partially vaccinated or fully vaccinated. So I would say that we're probably still there around 75 or 80% of our workforce, which is very, very good. But when you're still making the assumption that 20% of your workforce is unvaxxed, that's still a huge concern with this highly aggressive virus. And we also know that that it is now common to have a breakthrough infection, that even vaccinated people can carry the virus. Even though they don't get seriously sick, they can carry it and they can infect up to 5 or 6 people. And if those people are unvaccinated, we don't know how strong the symptoms could be or if it could lead to a hospitalization.
How about support staff, bus drivers? Are you okay with that on Thursday?
That's probably the biggest challenge for us opening schools is the transportation shortage. I'll be doing a community forum tonight to address the changes that we've had to make for transportation.
Is that a virtual thing you're doing?
It's a virtual forum.
Okay.
We had to move all of our transportation to a hub-based model, which means that instead of a route coming and picking up your child in front of your house or the next street over, we actually had to assign designated schools around the district as hubs, where now a parent's going to have to drive their kid a few blocks.
Because of the transportation shortage with the drivers.
In order for us to be able to give every single student a ride that needs transportation services.
So if someone is looking for a part-time job, do you have them available for bus drivers?
We are hiring. Yes, yeah, we are.
Like everybody else in America that's looking for workers.
We're also going head-to-head with every other school district for workers and for bus drivers, as well as the city and the county.
How about the facilities themselves? You talked about the federal money. Where's that money being spent? How is that money being used to make the first day of school a more pleasant experience for not only the educators, but all of the students?
Yeah, we've done a really, really good job. I want to compliment my operations team and our information technology team. I think our facilities are in absolutely amazing shape considering their age, considering the lack of funding we've seen from the legislature to take care of deferred maintenance.
Aging infrastructure.
Very aging infrastructure, but thanks to an infusion of federal cash, we've been able to go in and make them 100% COVID-friendly. I'm excited about the new outdoor hand-washing stations we're going to have in playgrounds throughout the district in our elementary schools, which means kids are going to be able to wash their hands outside before they even walk in.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make a huge difference for us. I'm excited about our air purification systems that we've installed.
Mm-hmm. You put a lot of money into that.
We've put a lot of money.
Air purification.
We've completed a large and very, very comprehensive retrofitting program with our HVAC systems. To try to bring them up to the highest quality of air purification that we can. And so I think we're in good shape heading into the opening of school.
All right. We will take a pause right here with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, 790-2040. If you have a question for the superintendent, he'd be happy to answer it. We'll be right back. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We love them. They've been a great sponsor, and it's a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. Just had a friend who went over with another friend, did some hiking over there, came back, had a fabulous experience. It's green like Tucson, so it's a perfect time of year. And with that elevation of 5,000 to 7,000 feet, daytime temperatures have been in the 80s. And we're, what, are we going to be pushing like 108 or something? And there's Silver City right now. I took a guess, John, and you put it up on the screen. It's 82 degrees and partly cloudy. Hey, you can't beat that. 3-hour drive over to Silver City. Start your planning now. SouthwestNewMexico.org. School begins at Tucson Unified on Thursday. We have the superintendent of Tucson Unified, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, with me in studio. We were talking about the increase in enrollment, which is good news. The virtual academy will have 2,000 participants. One thing we haven't talked about, we talked a little bit about transportation. Food service is in good shape.
Food service is in great shape, and I want to compliment our food services team. They serve tens of thousands of meals each and every single day, and we have some hardworking cafeteria workers and team members.
Those are big kitchens
working
to serve
across the district.
Many people.
Absolutely.
In these schools.
Yeah, they're huge kitchens, big operations.
Yeah.
And
there's always grumbling from students. That's not exactly what I wanted. I want this. And yeah.
Well, yeah, I know. I've been dealing with several leadership student groups from like Pueblo and Tucson High. And they want EGs in the cafeteria. And EGs doesn't meet the nutritional guidelines, right, for our state. So yeah. Sometimes the answer is no.
So what is the deal with athletics at Tucson Unified?
So athletics presented their COVID-19 mitigation plan a late spring. The good news is we're back in full force, and we're excited about a fall season. We're going to have full practices. We're going to have full attendance at games and activities. We're going to be asking the community to wear masks. But other than that, we're going to be good to go, and we're excited to actually play a full season and have our fall sports in full swing.
How about librarians and some of the support staff? Were you able to kind of bring some people back?
Well, our biggest increases are going to be in the arts.
Arts?
Yeah, we proudly, our governing board proudly voted to appropriate about $4 million into the restoration of lost music education.
Yeah, because of
the
financial reasons at Tucson Unified for years, some of those programs are just decimated.
Unfortunately, with the librarians, I wish I could do everything at once, right? And I'm a big champion of librarians. I think we need to put them back in every single school.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, that's going to take us a little bit. I think we're going to work with our budget advisory committee to see how we can bring those positions back year by year.
The desegregation funding Tucson Unified had since 1972 had been under a deseg order. The case is over?
We were awarded unitary status April 19th, which means that the judge in this case, the Honorable David C. Burry, ruled in the district's favor and recommended that the district be released from court supervision. Judge Burry asked for three pending homework items to be submitted to the court by mid-May. We have submitted all those items. Those items are now currently under review. Judge Burry, in his April 19th order, said pending the receipt of these three homework items, if you will, that he is going to officially declare the case over. So we have submitted everything that we've needed, and we're waiting. We're expecting in the next 30 or 40 days for the gavel to fall and for Judge Burry to officially sign the paperwork, officially ending the case and really bringing an end to one of the more contentious periods in TUSD history. So we're looking forward to moving on.
What does it mean financially to end it?
What it means financially is we're going to be free and clear to make decisions around the desegregation funds that we levy on a yearly basis. It also means that we're free and clear to start taking a hard look at the desegregation budget and to start making cuts in the areas where we are spending excessively on administration, legal fees, which will translate into savings for John Q. taxpayer. So we're excited about potentially levying less and asking the taxpayer for less money for deseg. I think we're still going to have to levy for desegregation monies in the next couple of years, just because we run the risk of the plaintiff suing us again if we don't.
But then it might go away.
You're right. Yeah. To continue to fund the very programs that have desegregated the district. But do we have to levy for the full $63 million? No, we're going to take a hard look on what we're spending on lawyers, what we're spending on administration, and try to pass those savings on to the taxpayers.
Boy, back in the day, your five-member board, which is now headed by Layla Counts. Back in the day, before this board, there was always news in the paper about everybody was fighting and everything. You rarely hear anything about the board not getting along. Is it better times over there for your meetings?
This has definitely been the most productive group that I've worked with in the last 4 years. And I think it's because, number one, they're all parents.
Really?
They feel a different sense of urgency. They have a better feel and understanding of the magnitude of their role being parents. And I see that. They take it very seriously. They read everything in between meetings. They're very deliberate on their votes. They're very well informed on their votes. And I think that's, to me, what's made a big difference is I'm now working with five parents.
So what will be the big issue going forward for this school year? We haven't talked about teacher shortages. Do we need to bring that up?
I think the teacher shortage issue has just been exacerbated. I think the big issue is going to continue to be this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic is not over. Will the Delta variant rampage across the district to the extent that we're going to be looking at a lot of school and classroom closures? Stay tuned.
Mm.
Will we turn the corner as a county and a city on vaccines? Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Will the mask mandate issued by the governor, will he do an about face on that because of a fourth wave? We don't know. So there's a lot to be I think looking out for, and I think that the pandemic continues to be the big issue for us.
And schools could be closed. There is protocol, right, for quarantine?
There is protocol for quarantine. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're looking at the one school district, Vail, that, mm-hmm. that's been open since mm-hmm. July 20th.
Right.
And they've already had something like over 65 or 70 positive cases.
Oh, boy.
That's a lot for a smaller district.
It is.
So we're kind of watching, and they're doing everything right, and mm-hmm. they've got solid mitigation. They have a really, really strong team over there, and it's the Delta variant.
Yep. All right, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, good luck on a Thursday, day after tomorrow. School bells ring again, and it's back to school. We'll see how it works out, and we'll talk to you in September. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Stay safe and keep healthy.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, John Couch, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Thanks for being with us. Back with you tomorrow at 12:04.